Today alone, 50,000 tons of trash will be generated in the city of New York. What happens to it when it's removed from your curb, and where does it wind up? Well, this week's Please Explain is all about waste management and landfills. And joining me now for some trash talk is Bob Gardner, the Senior Vice President of SCS Engineers and Vice Director of the Landfill Management Division of the Solid Waste Association of North America. Hello, Bob.
How are you?
Also with us is Benjamin Miller, who is a senior fellow at the CUNY Institute for Urban Systems and author of Fat of the Land, The Garbage of New York. And I'm very pleased to welcome you back to the show, Ben.
Thank you.
And Ben, what distinguishes a modern landfill from what's classically known as a dump?
Well, I'd be happy to let Bob answer that. I'm sure he could go into detail better.
Okay, Bob.
Yeah. I think so many times when people think about landfills, they think of dump. And it's really kind of a misnomer at this juncture because the modern-day landfill is a far cry from our parents' generation. A modern-day landfill includes many environmental protection measures, things like liners and systems to collect the liquids that are generated from the landfills, systems that collect landfill gas, treat it, use it for beneficial purposes, stormwater systems to control the amount and the quality of stormwater that is just discharged from the site. So they're, a far cry from what they were before. And people who typically come and visit these facilities are really surprised by the level of sophistication in the design and operation of these modern-day facilities.
What percentage of the waste we generate nationally ends up in landfills?
Probably around 55% or so is estimated to go, so the balance being what is either recycled and otherwise used for beneficial purposes or otherwise managed elsewhere.
And do we know what are the most common items that end up in the landfills?
Well, that's going to vary from place to place, of course, depending on the types of recycling operations that are there. But you will have your various residuals that can't be recycled. So most communities have some form of recycling, whether it's paper or plastics, glass, metals. And then the residuals are what go to the landfill. And that could be your various organics if you don't have an organics type of processing system or other materials that cannot otherwise be recycled.
So landfills are often compost heaps as well as repositories for other kinds of garbage.
Well, they are used for, in some cases, for treating organic materials. You may have heard of a term called a bioreactor landfill, and there are places in various landfills that operate their systems basically as a treatment system, where they try to take the organics, accelerate the decomposition of those organics, recover the gas that is generated quickly, and stabilize the waste as quickly as possible.
Ben, doesn't a lot of the waste generated in New York City come from construction sites?
Yes. When you say there are 50,000 tons of garbage, it's not really garbage as we know it, because a good half of that is the stuff that comes from building and tearing down the structures that we live in and work in and the infrastructures that support us. About half of it is what we think of as garbage or municipal solid waste.
Well, couldn't the construction waste be recycled?
Sure. A lot of it is, but nonetheless, the majority of it is landfilled at this point.
How much of New York City's garbage is being shipped to other states nowadays?
Well, focusing only on the MSW, which I know better, I mean, most CN construction and demolition is also being shipped to other states, but about 80% of our, well, about 20% of our waste that we generate, the residential waste that the city collects, is recycled. And then another 10% is sent to a waste energy facility in Newark, where it's burned to generate electricity. That's the stuff from the west side of Manhattan. The rest is shipped to Virginia and South Carolina and Georgia and Pennsylvania and Ohio and upstate New York.
So, Bob, a lot of it is ending up in your state, Virginia.
Yes.
How do the people of Virginia feel about that arrangement?
Funny you asked. Just the other day, I was eating dinner. I get a knock on my door, and these two gentlemen are saying around my door saying, "We'd like you to sign a petition to oppose the importation of solid waste into Virginia." And I happen to say, "Well, I'm in the business." It varies, obviously, to the communities that receive it. Actually, there is some very positive benefits that occur. One of the first cities, Charles City County, that started taking waste from New York. They get a fairly substantial check every year from waste management, for example, and that can be a pretty substantial benefit for them. It's a very rural community, and they get something close to $3 million a year that they've been able to build schools, libraries, even put a stoplight in their town. So it varies. People conceptually don't like the idea, but as we all know, interstate commerce does move, and solid waste is part of the interstate commerce.
My guests are Bob Gardner, Senior Vice President of SCS Engineers, Vice Director of the Landfill Management Division of the Solid Waste Association of North America, and Benjamin Miller, Senior Fellow at the CUNY Institute for Urban Systems, author of a book about trash called Fat of the Land, the Garbage of New York. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Ben, in 2001, New York's Fresh Kills landfill was closed and capped. So have we stopped sending all of our trash to places in the city? Staten Island is no longer available to the city?
That's right. And since that day, we've been spending about $1 million a day more than we did when we were sending it to Fresh Kills. The rate of increase has been going up about $12.5 million a year, or 150 cops, firefighters, and nurses every year is the rate of increase, and it's even increasing faster.
Well, since Bob says this can be a lucrative business, why aren't we doing something? Why isn't somebody in New York taking this? Is land too expensive in New York to make it lucrative here?
Within New York City, you mean?
Yeah.
Well, clearly, it's not going to be feasible to site a landfill in New York City. Landfills, as Bob will certainly tell you, have big footprints these days. They're expensive facilities, so you're no longer building small landfills. We should, however, build a landfill in upstate New York, just as New York City has a watershed. It would make sense to not export virtually all of the waste that New York City generates outside the state.
And why isn't that happening? Is it a NIMBY thing?
Well, certainly it's partly NIMBY. As I said, there is a bit of New York City waste that's now going to the Finger Lakes region within the last couple of years, but it's a private facility that's also expensive.
Didn't the early Dutch settlers extend the borders of Manhattan through landfills?
Yes, they did, but we can't do that now. It's illegal and unthinkable. It's truly beyond the realm of feasibility to site a landfill inside New York City, but it's certainly within the realm of feasibility to site a landfill in upstate New York instead of sending it to Virginia. It's a lot closer. The geology is the same as it is in western Pennsylvania, where we send most of our waste right now.
And some would say that years ago when Fresh Kills landfill was ultimately sited, that somebody in the city was thinking way far ahead of their time. Of course, the people on Staten Island have never liked Fresh Kills. And as it has grown and as it grew and grew during the years, the vocal opposition grew and grew.
Well, the opposition was partly because of the smell?
Smell, traffic, noise, all the above. And, you know, back in the day when landfills weren't run as they are today, where you didn't have gas collection and control systems to remove the gases that are generated or environmental protective measures to protect against leachate from leaving a landfill or for protecting stormwater, the impacts from those facilities were pretty significant. And so, rightfully so, they weren't happy with it. And in the case of Fresh Kill, it's a huge facility. It covers over 2,000 acres, so it's quite an impressive area.
And now it's been capped. What does that mean?
Well, a cap means basically, in that case, put a final cover system which limits the amount of infiltration that can occur in terms of moisture, minimizes that, and then allows you to capture the gas with various gas collection control systems, and provides a suitable exterior for end-use development. So somebody can do something positive with the land.
Somebody could put something over it. Do we know what happens to the rate of decomposition in a landfill once it's been capped?
It will tend to decrease.
Kind of collapses as the materials settle?
Well, there are two things. One, you will get settlement as the waste mass itself decomposes. It will settle, and you'll get sometimes 25-30% settlement in a landfill because of that. When you put the cap on there, you reduce that rate of decay, and it just takes longer. And so there are some in our industry who are pushing very hard to try to accelerate the decomposition of landfills while they're open, such that you don't have to deal with the long-term effects of those facilities as much.
Ben, in 2007, the New York Department of Sanitation re-estimated that the closure and post-closure costs of the Fresh Kills landfill would be around $1.8 billion, with $420 million of that already spent. Why is it so costly?
Well, it's a very expensive process. It's a long-term process as well. It'll be 30 years before there are portions of that landfill that humans can set foot on without spacesuits.
And Fresh Kills did have a lot more years of capacity available, didn't it?
Yes,
we've closed it before we had to because of the complaints of people on Staten Island.
Because of political pressure, yes.
Well, although, would you say that was unwarranted?
Well, what I would
if I lived near it, would I have good reason to be upset?
I would agree with what Bob said. Back in the day, there were odor complaints. There were tens of millions, hundreds of billions of dollars spent at Fresh Kills in its final decade on all the sorts of things that Bob is talking about, so that the odor complaints had decreased to virtually nothing. That was as well-run a landfill as any in the country. I don't know, Bob, I don't know if you'd agree with that in terms of the controls that were in place. Obviously, the liner system was natural rather than synthetic.
Right.
But in terms of actual emissions coming out of that facility, it was as well-run, I would argue, as any in the country, and certainly had as much capacity as any in the country.
What does a natural liner system mean?
Well, it means that Robert Moses had the dumb luck decided on natural clay. The surrounding areas actually had been called clay pit ponds. They were used for brick making and so on. So there's just this excellent layer of clay that prevented the leachate generated by the landfill from percolating downward and instead forced it to go into the marine surface waters, which from an environmental perspective at least dilutes it and keeps away from people.
About how much does it cost the city of New York per year to dispose of all of its garbage to other states?
It's costing us $1 billion a year for the whole nut, our whole New York City sanitation system. A few hundred millions of that, over 300 millions of that, are just the cost of export.
And how do we export it? Are we mostly by truck, or are we using rail cars
and barges? We're using rail for the 2,100 tons a day that come out of the Bronx every day. That goes to Virginia. And that's the landfill Bob was talking about. Another 950 tons a day go by rail from Staten Island across that little bridge to New Jersey to South Carolina. The rest, the majority of our waste, goes by tractor-trailer truck. These are 60-foot-long trucks. And with the private waste included, there are about 900 of those things a day. If they were running the New York City Marathon at highway speeds, there'd be a solid string of trucks from the opening gate on the Staten Island side of the Verrazano Bridge to mile 23 in Central Park every day.
Bob, how common is garbage importing and exporting between states and also, I guess, countries?
Well, I would say in terms of the issue of exportation of waste, almost every state does export or import. There are reports that are put out each year that kind of list which states are the biggest exporters and which ones are the biggest importers. New York State is the largest. Some data from 2005, New York State had some 7.2 million tons of waste. New Jersey was second on the list. Illinois was third. And Ontario kind of brings in a pretty substantial amount of waste into the country as well.
Canada is exporting its waste to the United States?
Oh, yeah.
Would Virginia be exporting its waste to another state, even though it's importing waste from New York?
Virginia has some, but it's pretty small quantity. They're a big importer. They're way down the list in terms of exporters. They are number two on the import list.
And what about other countries? Are we sending our waste to Central America and to the Caribbean?
Not to the degree that we have internally transportation of waste interstate. We all are familiar with what happened with the New York City garbage barge when it tried to find a home elsewhere.
Yeah. We have to take a little break. If you in our audience would like to join in this conversation, have any questions, we're going to get into recycling, and I'd be perfectly happy to have you pose some of the questions and also suggest other ways of dealing with these problems. Our number here is 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-WNYC. And my guests are Benjamin Miller and Bob Gardner on this Please Explain about landfills and waste management. And we are back with Bob Gardner and Benjamin Miller talking about landfills and waste management on today's Please Explain. And we are inviting your calls to 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-WNYC. You can also leave comments on our show page at WNYC.org. Let's talk about recycling for a moment, because that is the obvious alternative. And Ben, you said that 20% of New York's garbage goes into recycling. I have a sense that in other places it might be more. I know in Europe, in public places, you see two or three different trash cans encouraging different forms of recycling. It's just as a matter of course. In New York, we had, at least at the beginning of Mayor Bloomberg's administration, resistance to even doing any recycling because he said it was too expensive.
Well, there are certainly some European countries where there is more recycling than there is in this country. There's certainly European countries where there's not. Look at southern Italy, for example, and other places. In this country, a 20% recycling rate from the kind of city that we have, in other words, a lot of high-density, high-rise apartments, is very good and quite average. That is to say, we're not really behind the curve at all. In fact, we're probably doing about as well as the best city in the country, which is probably Seattle. Pretty comparable rates when you look at the high-rise proportion of the population.
And that high-rise does present some really significant challenges to recycling.
We're going to take a call from Sandra from the Bronx. Hi, Sandra. You want to talk about recycling?
Yeah, absolutely, because I'm a little bit of a lunatic. I actually go into sometimes the regular garbage and pick out the glass bottles and the plastic bottles and put them in the recycling bins. And I wonder if I'm wasting my time, because in the Bronx Zoo, for example, they have so many environmentally friendly objects. They have this greatest environmentally friendly bathroom. But all the garbage seems to be mixed. And so I'm wondering, why don't they have enough of those separate bins? Why do they mix the garbage if it's so, you know, such a environmentally conscious organization? Why don't they have more separate bins for plastic?
Ben?
I can't address what goes on at the Bronx Zoo. I don't know their system. In general, I could say you're not wasting your time. The stuff that is collected separately for recycling does indeed get produced into new materials to the extent that it is feasible, is not too contaminated, and so on. You're not wasting your time. You're saving a great deal of money on the city because of the disposal costs that are avoided, and because of the material costs. For every pound of garbage that you see, there were 61 pounds of extraction and production waste. So every pound you're avoiding is significant.
Although I have had many people assure me that after the garbage collectors, the sanitation department comes to my house and takes that recycled stuff, the separated garbage, they just throw it all in the same place, and it gets mixed together anyway.
It's a different truck. It may look like the same truck. In other words, it's a compactor truck, as it should be, because if we didn't compact whatever we put in the back of a waste truck, we would be having too many trucks. We want to minimize traffic. That's a separate truck just for recycling.
So, Bob, has most trash been sorted by the time it gets to a landfill?
It depends on the region of the country that you're at. Some places will have pretty extensive curbside collection systems, separate yard waste collection, and so you'll have a fairly, I'll say you'll have your prime materials already picked out, the paper, the metals, the aluminum cans and so forth. But it really does vary from place to place.
In New York City, our landfill ends up taking about 25% of stuff that should have been recycled but wasn't. That is to say, materials that people didn't capture. We're getting about half of what should be captured is not captured. We can't expect 100%. We can't expect 90%. We're getting a good 50% capture rate now. We'd like to increase that.
Is most of the waste that landfills receive considered non-hazardous?
Yes.
So that they are separated as well?
Yes. Typically, most the city of New York does, and most municipalities have what they call household hazardous waste or special waste collection that attempts to remove household hazardous materials, things like solvents and paints and batteries and other kind of materials or pesticides that are used in the house, to try to get those out of the waste stream so they don't get into the landfill. And so those programs are in place, and they do a pretty good job of doing that, as well as their separation at the landfill in many cases if they see something.
Moy from Newark, New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Leonard. How are you doing? Your show rocks, man.
Thank you so much. I'm too old to understand what you just said, but I'm sure it was meant as a compliment.
Yeah, it totally was. I'm
too young to be heebie-jeebie and too old to be CBGB.
All right. No worries, man. Yeah, I'm plugging this group in Newark called Urban Renewal Corp. And what they do is they collect people's old computers and monitors and printers, and either they recycle them responsibly or they use them to train people in computer skills that, you know, haven't learned those skills before and they're looking to get a job. So I think they're doing a really great job, and they'll come and you can either go and drop it off there or they'll come and pick it up. And you can take all your other e-waste there, too, and they'll recycle it for you.
Are we seeing companies like that growing up around the country, Bob?
Yes. Electronics recycling is becoming big business. I think back many years ago, I used to live in Florida, and I'll just never forget my neighbor. Before e-recycling became an issue, he and his dad used to go around and collect computers because they knew where to get the gold out of the computers, and they'd mine these various things of gold. But there's all kinds of materials that are being recycled from those various monitors, computers.
Jim from Union City, New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, kind of a two-pronged question. One is in Hudson County here, we only have to put out two bins, one for paper, and the other bin is for plastic, glass, and metal. I was wondering how that gets sorted after it indeed goes into one truck.
In fact, it's not just in Hudson County. It's in New York City as well, and we also include, I think, milk containers with the plastic, yes.
And then the other question relates more to there's the resurgence of medical waste on the Jersey Shore recently, and I was told in the 90s Clinton cleaned it up because the federal waiver that New York City got on medical waste was no longer tolerated under Clinton. And then I was wondering about medical waste going back, mainly generated by New York, and what was the deal on enforcement on medical waste.
Let me start with the recycling. In New York, contrary to what Leonard understands, we have the trucks are split in half, so it may look like a single truck, but one side is getting the paper and one side is getting the commingled.
Oh, I wasn't talking about the paper, but I separate paper.
That's metal, glass, and
plastic. And then I have metal,
commingled.
Glass.
That's correct.
I have milk containers and a whole bunch of other things.
Right.
And they all go together, and they don't seem to really have much in common.
Well, what they have in common is that they're not degraded by being smashed into each other. In other words, there are no glass fibers getting into the paper, which makes it more difficult to recycle. So that's why they're kept separate. In a processing facility, then, they're separated through some combination of mechanical and manual means.
A listener wonders why we don't do that with our public trash as well. It all goes into the same garbage cans.
Well, there are real challenges with that. There are two different processes that are typically used in recycling. Well, actually three. You have what is called the single stream recycling, where you have one container and you put all your recyclables in that container, and it all goes into one truck, and then it all goes to a processing facility where it's separated out. That simplifies the ease of collection. Then you have the types of systems that we've been talking about the last couple of seconds, where you have a separate bin for your paper and a separate bin for your other materials. And sometimes they're put in trucks that have, like you said, two different containers. And they do so for reasons in terms of trying to minimize contamination of the various products, so you don't have your paper with your glass and so forth. But again, various systems or various types of processes are used to really a function of the economy.
Recently, the idea of landfill mining has gained popularity. What's that?
Well, landfill mining is a process where you are going in and digging up of the old landfill. And you might do so for reasons, for example, if you have an old landfill that's unlined that is contaminating the groundwater, and you would want to dig it up and remove the source of the contamination. Or if you want to try to recover that land for additional disposal capacity using a modern-day landfill construction approach. And so various communities are beginning to look to see whether they can dig up their landfills, recycle the soils that are there and use that material on their operations, and if possible, remove some of the materials that can be recycled. It's not cheap. It's very expensive to do, in many cases. I was just listening to a presentation the other day where down in Miami, they've spent $51 million so far just removing a portion of a landfill to deal with a contamination issue, so it isn't cheap.
One of the concerns a lot of people have is that landfills give off sizable amounts of methane gas, don't they?
Yes, they do.
So how serious a risk to the environment does methane pose?
Well, go ahead, Ben.
Well, from a global greenhouse perspective, it's very significant. It generates, for example, 45 times more greenhouse gases than waste energy would, where you're reducing that and recovering energy. Bob will now, I'm sure, talk about how it can be recovered.
There are these capture systems that are being developed, but they don't capture at all.
Which are partially effective. They're certainly better than nothing. So methane is certainly significant from a greenhouse gas perspective. From a public health perspective, I think Bob will agree that it's less serious. But I'll let you answer that.
Yeah, landfills, if you look at the contribution or the collection that has occurred from landfills, landfills are kind of way ahead of their time with regards to reducing the amount of emissions from landfill gas. Back in the 90s, you had the new source performance standards, which were adopted, which required landfills to put in gas collection and control systems if they were a certain size. And so most of your large facilities and most of your even smaller facilities have gas collection and control systems, are capturing the gas and are flaring it right now, or making use of it for beneficial purposes like electrical generation or firing it directly into a boiler for beneficial use. There are hundreds of applications. I think there are about 400 and almost 450 various landfill gas to energy projects in the United States alone that are making beneficial use of that gas.
Now, what about incineration? There are pros and cons to that as well, aren't there?
No, not really when you're comparing it to landfilling. We're talking about this stuff, the last resort, the stuff that cannot be prevented. I mean, obviously, you should take your own shopping bag to prevent plastic bags from being generated. It's not necessary.
I try to do that as often as possible. Sometimes I forget.
I carry a little one in my briefcase. It's you know, if you were charged for it, or if you paid for getting rid of your waste, which is one of the things I've been arguing we should do, we should charge people for the trash and not charge them for recycling to help them remember, give an economic signal.
We were talking about incineration.
Oh, so you know, clearly things that can be prevented should be. Things that can be recycled should be. And we could do more to recycle here. People could capture more than they're capturing, and we could perhaps add some more materials to our waste stream, such as textiles. But there's going to be a point beyond, and we could do some composting in the city, but we clearly can't have apartment dwellers holding their garbage, their kitchen waste, for a week to be picked up to be handled in the factory. I mean, that could be done by restaurants, and it should be. I mean, we should have facilities for that. That clearly be cost effective, but there's going to be some residual, and it's going to be fairly significant, which needs to be disposed of. And then it's a question of landfilling or waste energy. Landfilling is 1/45 of, creates 1/45 of the greenhouse gases. It's cheaper in this part of the world, and it certainly will be cheaper as energy prices go up because you're recovering energy. It's clearly more beneficial from a public health perspective because landfills do generate leachate, which does pose in the long term a potential health risk.
Ben, or Bob, I don't care. What about plasma arc gasification? I've heard about that. Is that a promising approach?
Well, I wrote a little article a couple of weeks ago for our division, the Solid Waste Association of North America, and there has been a substantial interest throughout the country in plasma arc, and it's been touted almost as the miracle technology. And as I advise the folks that are in our division, is that the problem at this juncture is that it really hasn't been demonstrated on a scale that most of your larger municipalities operate on, for example.
Well, how does it work?
Well, it's technology that's been around for a long time, and it's a process that uses a plasma arc that's about 10,000 degrees Fahrenheit that incinerates, basically, gasifies the materials that are in the waste, and then uses that syngas to generate electricity. And you produce a slag, and you produce other kinds of heat that can be used for other beneficial purposes. And so there isn't a facility that has been built of the size that would really demonstrate that it's going to be practical. There's one in Canada that's currently under testing at this juncture. I believe it's around an 80-ton-per-day facility compared to 50,000 tons per day that New York City generates. So it's a technology that is still to be demonstrated in terms of whether it's going to be practical on a large-scale application. Down in Florida, they're looking at developing one, a private operation in St. Lucie County. And it's undergoing some substantial changes in scope. It really originally started at about 3,000 tons per day.
We have to leave it there, unfortunately. But I thank you so much, Bob Gardner and Benjamin Miller, for being our guests today on Please Explain, talking about landfills and waste management. And thanks to all of you who have called in. On Monday's show, we kick off our live coverage of the Republican convention in the Twin Cities. Also, John Kerry's daughter, Alexandra, talks about going on the campaign trail with her dad 4 years ago. We discuss the last book in our underappreciated summer reading series, Uriel Yesha's 1927 novel Envy, which Nabokov called the greatest novel to come out of the Soviet Union, and everything you needed to know about toxic mold, but I'm warning you, it can get pretty scary. The Leonard Lopate Show is produced by Blakeney Schick, Sarah English, and Stephen Valentino. Melissa Egan is the executive producer, and we had help today from Julia Corcoran, Stephanie Hughes, Liz Erickson, and Angela Sheldon. Debbie Daughtry is at the audio controls. I'm Leonard Lopate, your host. Thanks for listening. We'll see you on Monday.